the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, Mike.
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon. He's back, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, Mike.
And then across the table over here on my left, we've got Rob Arbitier.
Hello, Mike.
And today our guest is Josh Anthony. He's one of the hosts for the podcast Galley Slaves.
Hi, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Hey, yay! Thanks for joining us. All right, gang. Well, hey, show 52 after a two-month break.
Ooh.
2 months. And first of all, I want to thank everybody who sent in some emails asking where the heck we were, and a couple people who thought we died. No, we are still all alive.
Well, it's nice to be missed. It's nice to be missed.
Is it fine alive?
You know what? How can they miss us if we don't go away?
I wanted to tell you that we got asked why we took a break. And basically, we took a break for a couple reasons. Number one, we did 51 shows. And after 51 shows, we needed a break. But I know everybody's schedule got really, really, really busy there.
Really,
for a while.
Really.
I mean, it was one of those situations where, you know, you would be having guests like, this is the podcast with Mike and Rob.
Yeah, which nearly happened a few times.
And also I needed to take a vacation because I was just going crazy. So it was all good. It was great to take a little break and now coming back for show number 52. I just wanted to ask really quick, what you guys did during the break, during the 2 months, you know. Bobby, what'd you do?
Nothing. Sat at home, waiting for you. No one called, busy by the phone. Just contemplating suicide.
Rob, what about you?
Sounds great.
Luxury.
Well, we actually got completely buried on a few interactive projects, which are not quite out yet, so I can't yet talk about them, but they all went way, way, way longer than we thought they were going to, by a factor of two or three times. And it was just – it seemed like 24/7. I was spending
– It was.
Well, it was. Well, for – what was it? For about 5 weeks, I think, we did seven-day weeks, and I was in the studio from 8 a.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week.
Holy smokes.
And that was really brutal. And we've now turned everything in, but the product isn't out yet, so I can't talk about it.
Wow.
But it's a pretty cool project. And actually, we did that, and we've been doing a theme park attraction for a European venue that I'll be able to talk about. It's almost done. We'll be able to talk about it in a couple weeks, probably.
Wow.
And, there's just been a lot going on.
You know, one of these days, it is just going to be a Rob podcast. So you can
Well, there's
going to
be so much
stuff
I can finally talk about. And there's been a lot of Stevie stuff going on, too. Stevie has been on tour, and it's been a very successful tour in the U.S., and now he's going to be going to Europe and other continents, and I'm not going on those tours, thank God, but I'm helping get him set up for it.
You might hear that.
He's already heard it in person. It's okay if he hears it on the podcast.
Well, I know Scott, you were working on a blockbuster film, if you want to just mention a little bit, because actually in the second half, we're going to talk about what Scott was up to more in depth, but why don't you tell everybody what you were doing?
I was on the other side of the pond. It depends on which way you which pond you're looking at.
No, the only side of the pond.
I was having a bit of tea.
Spot of tea.
Yeah,
right.
I have to be doffed. Anyway.
Oh, you got to hear that a lot over there, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
You would.
So, one day I was looking at my email, and I got an email from a friend of mine named Guillermo de Toro, and he said, "What are you doing? And could you stop doing what you're doing? And how fast could you be in London?" And I went, "I'm available." He says, "I'll get back to you." Next thing I know, I get another email saying, "Can you be here tomorrow?" 4 days later, I was in London taking over a project called Hellboy 2 and was there for every hour of 9 weeks.
Wow.
So it was,
hell.
It was hell, boy. It was fun. It was basically we got a chance to climb Mount Everest in the audio realm, and it's probably the hardest thing I've ever done, as well as probably one of the most just fun things. But it's pretty crazy.
That's great. And you know what? I saw the film. Great. You did a great job.
Thank you.
And we'll talk a little bit about that on the second half because I got some questions about some of the sound effects and some of the stuff that you did. But you did a great job,
especially the
creature sounds. Awesome. Everything was really good. Especially that one guy in the suit. You know, his sound.
Which one?
The guy who was that gaseous form.
Krauss.
Yeah.
Krauss!
Yes, Krauss. He was awesome. Awesome sounds. But we'll talk about that later. I took a vacation. Actually, I haven't been in the studio for a month. Today was my first day actually back into the studio, and that was kind of fun.
I bet.
But before I left, I, you know, finished working on another feature film documentary and then did a project for a big studio that just went south. I mean, it about as bad of an experience doing a project as it can be.
Wow.
It was horrible. It was a situation. Have you ever been in a situation where they basically you're the one who just has to take it? It's like all the blame gets, you know, put on your shoulder because there's nobody else to blame.
I was going to say, is there a different kind of situation? That's the only time I kind of heard of.
I was working on a major release, a DVD for a really big movie that happened over the holidays. And I can't tell you because I'm going to tell you some inside stuff. But essentially, I had to mix about 10 featurettes in an evening and then take it over to the giant studio, to their lot, go into one of their sound rooms, and it just getting picked apart.
Oh, man.
By everybody there. And you can't, you know, you really can't say anything. You can't say, like, hey, I only had an evening to do all this, and hey, the editors didn't know what the hell they're doing, and hey, you know, you can't make excuses. You just kind of sit there, and you kind of nod, and you just, you know, slowly but surely, you know, the only thing that keeps you going is, I'm going to talk about this someday on my podcast. But it was horrible. It was horrible. So between that and then just working crazy hours, I needed a break. And so I just walked away. And let me tell you, that was the best thing because when I came back, you know, I didn't do anything tech wise. I didn't buy any software. You know, obviously I still worked on the computer some because that's what kind of geeky people do. But it was really great. It was a great trip and took the train across country and just had a really good time, you know, seeing America.
Yeah.
But it brought me, you know, I wanted to ask you guys, do you ever have to step away from it? Do you ever get to the point where you step away from whatever you're doing and what do you do for relaxation?
All the time.
And what do you do? I mean, Rob.
Yeah, I need to.
I know
right now I'm supposed to finally be taking a short trip just to be out for a few days coming up. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard. It's especially hard if you love what you do because you're willing to spend more time than is usually reasonable to do it. But you still need a break. Even if you're enjoying what you do, you need a change of scenery. You need to be able to get out and think and just not be in the middle of the work environment all the time. And a couple times a year I'll kind of just go someplace else to disintegrate a little bit and then come back refreshed.
Josh, what about you? Do you ever get to the point where you just need to say, you know, screw this, I need to walk away from...
I haven't had a vacation in years, so I just actually signed up to go to London in like 3 weeks.
Oh,
and
great.
I'm going there for 10 days. But usually every day I go running up at the Hollywood Reservoir and I get away, I sit outside, you know, recoup and get back into the next day.
It is so necessary.
No matter what you do, you definitely get stressed out, especially in this area.
And what about you, Scott?
For me, it's got to involve water. Below it, above it. My favorite thing to be is on the trapeze of a catamaran, you know, laying out, watching the dolphins jump in front. That's how I chill out. It usually has to do with either Tahiti, Hawaiian Islands, anything of that ilk, but... I love to work hard, and I love to vacation. I don't get to do as much as I like, but when I do, I like to do it up.
That's great. Bobby, what about you? What do you do?
You know, I play football every couple of times a week.
Kicks people.
I do.
Football meaning the real football.
No, the original football.
Yeah, with the feet.
Yeah, and then you kick the ball.
So Bobby plays soccer.
Yeah, bit of football and take pictures. I like taking pictures and just... chilling, running,
long walks in the park.
Well, all that to say that it's good to be back, and it's good to be back podcasting again, and we're going on number 52.
Wow.
There's some I do want to say that right now Andrew's out, and he won't be with us for a little bit because he's on a
passed out?
Well, he's on a dream gig. He's on a really good gig that we can't talk about, but when he can, it's going to be pretty awesome.
And he'll be able to.
Yep. And next, on the next podcast, actually Martin will be back, and we're going to be doing a podcast, on songwriting. We're going to be talking about collaboration, and then we'll get an update on Martin and his, how his, CD's going and sales and some of the things about the video and, okay. Well, you know, some things happened in the world of tech. And I want to discuss a few of these things because I know one of them affects both of you guys.
Does it?
Giga Studio. It's no longer.
Thank God.
Giga Studio is gone?
Tascam.
Wow. Tascam dropped it?
Tascam dropped them. It's no longer developing for Giga Studio.
There you go.
They are no longer.
So who makes it like the Vienna, the big Giga libraries?
Well, a lot of them have gone to their own player.
Gone to their own player.
The only thing more surprising than that Tascam has stopped development is finding out that they were still doing development, because I haven't heard about anything new for Giga.
Well,
in a long time.
Were supposedly, they had a, you know, Giga Studio 4, and it was going to be apparently a really good new version, and, you know, and actually Giga
Studio
3.
Is somebody
going
to buy them out, you think, or is it, are they just gone?
It's weird to say it, but most of my friends who still use Giga Studio have systems that have Giga 2, are loaded with a ton of sounds, and they go to that library, and they don't ever plan on upgrading anything about it because it sounds great. It's fairly complete, and there's been no reason for them to go up to
absolutely
to 3.
That's what I'm one of those.
I just have a lot of friends who are in that situation, and that's probably one of the reasons that didn't make
Windows
sense to keep upgrading.
I've got Windows 98 on two of mine.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, but you know that brings up something that I want to get your guys' opinion on. Eventually, you're going to find computers that aren't going to run 98 anymore, and you're going to find computers that are just going to be obsolete, and you have all these sample libraries.
Yeah,
and,
but you'll always be able to find an old piece, an old computer for next to nothing if you need an old machine that can run that. I mean, I've got a stack of motherboards that can run Windows 98 if I ever had a need. They're worth about 50 cents each, and I'm sure
it's valuable or advantageous more likely to companies like Native Instruments for their Kontakt player. They've got Kontakt 3 and
Well, that's definitely something that killed Giga.
Oh, yeah. No, well, that's a fantastic. That's what I use now, and I used to use Giga. But Giga Studio 3 was pretty good. They had that built-in convolution reverb.
Giga Studio was crap. The whole editing about it was a joke. The whole thing was
– it just had good sounds.
Tell me how you
really
feel.
It had good sounds.
They were the first streaming sound.
Yeah. Don't hold back, Bobby.
They were rubbish, and they should be gone good.
But there were great libraries for it.
Great sounds, though.
Yeah. Great sounds, but the software was not so good.
See, Josh?
Just being honest. What's wrong with that?
That's what it is.
Come and let it out, man. Let it out.
Just telling you. And all the times, I mean, people, they didn't listen to people that asked them for things, Giga Studio. A lot of times they didn't. So many of my mates, as you well know, they all were frustrated as hell with it, and Kontakt came along and kicked their ass. Next.
Yeah, just being able to edit. I mean, the way you used to have to edit on Giga was just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, I never edited samples.
Yeah, most people never did.
But they wanted to.
Yeah. Well, even if you just wanted to change, like, one thing, a filter, an envelope, something simple.
I always thought they sounded great, though. I mean, you put Giga Studio was a great sounding sampler. It really was.
It sounded like whatever went into it.
It's streaming that sample. I mean, it's streaming from hard drive. If the digital filters weren't terribly set up badly, it's just going to be the same sound as pretty much anything. I mean, unless there's some really bad code in there and some inefficient stuff, it's not.
But there were a lot of great sound designers doing the libraries for it, so it did have great sound.
I mean, you ever think we're going to get to a point where we're going to be talking about? Remember, Kontakt? That was a good player.
Of course,
that's just a matter of time.
And then you just got to keep going to the next one
It seems like people are making more and more proprietary programs for their samples, which is good in a way because of piracy and that sort of thing. It makes it harder to rip off.
Also, they're much more intelligent. It's not just playing a sample. It's actually making intelligent decisions.
Scott, did you use Giga Studio at all? Giga Sampler?
I was going to. I couldn't edit on it. So I ended up buying.
You couldn't what?
Edit. I said, okay, how do I?
No, are you serious? Are you just joking me?
You see? No, I sat there and said, okay, how do I? Oh, yeah, I can't. And I went, never mind.
Well, you can, but you have to.
But then I ended up getting, I got into Mach 5, then I got into Kontakt, then I got into Structure, then I got back into Kontakt. And right now, pretty much my samples is Structure and Kontakt, and then whatever library I'm buying comes with whatever player it's coming with.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I need.
Way to be.
What about DigiDesign samplers?
Structure.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, Structure's great.
Yeah, that's cool. I like Structure.
I mean, for sound design, there's nothing, I hate to say, that beats it for wanting to do a certain kind of design, and that is when you can grab a sound on a track, on a disc track, drag it on the Structure, and play it within a second.
Right.
Boom. Take it, pitch wheel it, you know. All of a sudden, it's great. You've done it. Next. And if that's what you need it for, it's great. I think if you want to get into a lot more mangling, Kontakt gives you a lot more options and features, and because then you have the features of, do you want to play a keyboard where it slows down but doesn't pitch, or pitches but doesn't slow it down, or vice versa. It gives you a lot of really cool features, and the sound design is really important.
In Kontakt.
Yeah, Kontakt. Yeah.
And Kontakt's massively
and
powerful.
And also sounds better now. The first Kontakt was
exactly.
Okay.
They got the gain structure much better. Yeah. 2.0 after 2.0, 3.0, it sounds great. They got the scripting in Kontakt, which I'm heavily into. It's
oh, really?
Outstanding. You can do crazy stuff with it. Absolutely. I built a piece of hardware, and I wrote a script specially for this hardware so I can control east-west library and,
oh, nice.
And do some tricky stuff, and it's pretty, really fun. And
That's cool. No, so you can customize it to tailor it to your own.
Write your own code so you can press a note and have
nice.
It changes the compressor. Oh, yeah,
that's
whatever.
Nice.
You know what's kind of cool? I don't know if you guys have seen it, the Novation software. Novation keyboards, they had an update on the software, which I don't see many people work with. Anyway, it automatically senses plugins in Pro Tools.
Oh, right.
So automatically you call up a plugin, and all of a sudden every knob and button on Novation becomes active, so you don't need like a Control 24 or something, and all of a sudden you can use the – and then you can automate it.
Wow.
Right.
And it's really cool.
But unfortunately, I tried it with Nuendo, and you did too, right?
We didn't we had a nightmare with
it. I tried it twice now, and it didn't work. I bought another one about – 6 weeks
ago. You did, really?
2-3 months ago. And I went back. I said, okay, they're ready now. And I took it in there. And,
wait, you bought another one?
Yeah, Innovation.
Well, he had returned the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. we've bought them. Almost every sound designer has it now. The
and
little two-octave ones.
Well,
it works better on a Mac, and it works better. Yeah. It worked on some PCs. I got it to work on a few computers, just not the ones I wanted it to work with.
Yeah, the Mac seems to be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. That's
go
great.
Go to the Mac.
I know.
Come to the Mac.
Go to the light.
You know something? Okay, let's talk about this for 1 second. I'm not bagging on this, but Macintosh. I love it dearly. Been a Mac user for 17, 18 years. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful program. But what's with this mouse? I mean, I have to mouse everything. It's like, okay, Windows, I'm not a great fan of Windows. But either way, there is a very sensible button or a quick key that you can say, make this window as big as the screen is. On the Mac, you can't do that. You have to go, you press the green button and it makes it as big as the...
Doesn't fill the whole screen.
Does not fill the whole screen.
That's really annoying.
And it's absolutely stupid, let alone annoying. I'm like, dude, you used to do this on your old 9.2 and... 6.0 and 5.0 before MultiFinder. So what's up with this? So I rest my case. So I like Mac, but I'm dying for them to get there.
Does it fit the 16-inch monitor? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the other things that have happened in the Hey, I like Mac, but I just got a new computer, and it was a Windows Vista machine.
I heard Lexicon's got a new toy.
So what do they got?
I haven't seen it yet, but they're going to drop one off. It's... supposedly they've got something that's a PCM 80s or something, but I hear that they've got a plug-in with it that basically you can control it from Pro Tools.
Hmm.
And somebody told me it's pretty much got a 480 in it, like all the presets.
Wow!
And then something, and it's a single rack space.
Wow!
And you can control it from your DAW.
That's lovely. That's incredible.
So that's what I've heard. I haven't seen it.
Why don't you tell Josh what a 480 is? Because
I am trying to. I can work iTunes, drag and drop from LimeWire.
Basically, there was a reverb that used to be an old Lamborghini of reverbs.
Yeah, it was the verb to have.
You know, it's a $10,000 thing that makes it sound like you're in a church.
Really?
Yes. And other cool stuff. But it's something that nobody usually can afford, not many people.
Except me. I bought one from some loser a couple of years ago.
That was the 300.
No, it's good. I still love that stuff.
And I've invested in it and I've put my money since then.
Well,
it's great. It's lovely.
Great-sounding reverbs.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was, did you hear about Yahoo? They're shutting off their music service. And essentially, their digital rights management was... You know, you were sending out keys. So if you wanted to take your music and move it to another computer, you could do that and get another key for them. But now that they're no longer going to be supporting that, you've got a lot of people who bought this music from Yahoo and essentially
buy CDs.
SOL. And really that brings up, although they're going to compensate the users in some way, they haven't really discussed how they're going to do that. That really, you know, it shows you what's wrong with the whole, you know, digital rights management and what can happen. Whereas if you buy a record or a CD, you have that forever. With this stuff, you know.
So it's like a plugin. You buy something and then it stops working.
Yeah.
So you don't really own it. You own it for as long as that system's going.
Yahoo had its own library of music that you can buy from.
Well, it's own music iTunes service, right? Like an iTunes type of a thing. But obviously, since you
is it just MP4 files or WAV files?
You know what? It was some, I don't know, encoded MP3s or DRM MP3s. I'm not sure what
it
was.
So you still can't play it on anything else? Or?
But, well, you can play it on the last key that you got can play it on that PC, that computer that you have last, mm-hmm. but that's it. You can't move it to, you know, another player. You can't move it to another computer.
Well, can you?
No. So, I mean, what they're telling you is you can burn, you know, a CD and then re-import it, but there you go.
So it's the music that keeps on billing?
The music that keeps on getting worse and worse, you know.
So they, yeah, you can burn a CD. That's about it.
But it's, you know, it just shows you though, I got hundreds of dollars worth of music, you know, probably thousands of dollars worth of music from iTunes. But, you know, we think they're going to be around forever, but you never know with this stuff. And it really, I don't know, just gives me a little uneasy feeling about my libraries that I can't see. It's all my iPod.
But you can make CDs of them and do.
Yeah, but do I want to like 4,000 songs? Do I really want to, you know, start burning 15 at a time, you know?
Just keep buying new drives, keep transferring.
Yeah. I mean, and the odds of Apple going away, granted, aren't that great, but still, it just really makes you wonder.
Oh, Jobs is not looking that well.
Well, that's true too, you know. All those rumors about
that's terrible. Hopefully not.
But yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, I bought a new iPod, the classic, the 160, and I fit my whole library in a little iPod.
It's like $20, right? They're really cheap right now. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's a 600, isn't it? Is it still 6?
No. The iPod was like $350. It's the classic. It's a classic iPod with
the 160 gig.
160 gig.
Is that cheap now?
Yeah, $350. That's pretty good. You know, that's for an iPod where you can fit your. I mean, I still have, you know, like 30 gigs left over, and I had hours of music. It was great. It was really cool. But you look at that, and you know, if somebody has that as their only means for all that money, I mean, the iPod is worth thousands of dollars. You know, and it's just amazing. I just look at this whole Yahoo and the digital rights management. It just gives me an icky feeling. But I don't know. You know, you have the whole movement to get rid of DRM, and a lot of times I'm really.
How many times have you gone to plugins when you go, oh, is there a MacTel version of that? And they go, no.
Oh, I know. It's
and you go, oh, okay. I used to like that plugin.
You know, I swear it. Like archaeology, in 500 years they're going to look back and they think we're going to be cavemen because nothing's going to be, there's going to be no product. It's all going to be like hard drives that have turned into dust, you know, and you know, it's like there was a society they invented the light bulb and then they went back to the Stone Age.
Right.
All right. Well, hey, before we take a break, I wanted to tell you guys, a really, cautionary tale, and mainly for the listening audience about career moves. A friend of mine, and I'm not going to name any names because I know he listens to the podcast. I got him a job at a high-end advertising agency to be a mixer, and he went through the interview process, and he went and he got an offer. He accepted the offer, and he went in to go quit his old job, and I talked to him before the job and I said, hey, listen, they're going to try to keep you because you're really good and you're really cheap. So just be aware, they're probably going to offer you $4 or $5 more an hour and they're going to say all these promises, but you know, stick to your guns because you really, in this business, it's really hard to move up unless you move out. So he said, yeah, no problem. Well, he goes to, quit essentially. And I don't hear anything from him. And then on Monday, we get an email and it says that he decided to not take the job and to pursue other opportunities at the company that he's with. I was like, oh my goodness. Well, flash forward a couple months, I get an email from the guy. He says, hey, Mike, give me a call. You know, we got to talk. So I call him up, and he got laid off from that job. And I was like, dude, I hate to tell you I told you so, but I told you so. And I was thinking about that, and I wanted to bring it up with you guys and just, you know, that, you know, what kind of advice do you have for people who get an opportunity like that and get these little carrots dangled in front of them? It's like, you know, do you guys have any experience or any words of advice that would help people out there? Because my advice is always, you know, it's really hard if you're in a place, if you come in, unless you see that other people have been aggressively promoted around you, generally you have to go out to go up a level before you can come or, and then come back in. And I don't know. I wanted to mention that because, it was such a career killer for this guy, you know, because he could have been in a situation where he can get a lot of titles and he can move up and then he'd have a resume and it's a great resume builder, yeah, you know? I mean, have you been around? Do you have any experiences like that in your own lives where you've done moves where you look back and you're going, God, I should not have done that, you know?
Only when I come to the podcast, really, but no.
I mean, I think on our side, we've got the opposite stories. At our company, I remember when, you know, Kim Waugh was selling sheepskins and came in as a transfer guy, and he grew all the way to the second head of the company. And then he ended up taking over all the posts to Warner Brothers. But in other words, from being a transfer guy, going all the way to being number two.
Right.
And I've got so many stories of people that I knew that came in as drivers who are now, you know, making easy into the good six figures.
But see, your company has a track record of doing that.
It does.
See,
I think it comes down to, I think, is that when you look for companies, when you're first starting out, a lot of times you may be in sweatshops and there are companies that just use and abuse. But then I think there are companies that are really good and that if you are aggressive enough and willing to play the games and dance the dances, you can go all the way up.
But you know what? I have to say one thing, though. No matter how good the company, the moment they find out that you as the employee have an offer from someplace else, it tells them two things. It tells them, number one, they should do something to keep you because you're good and – you know, it would be silly to let you go if they can throw a little money or whatever at you. But it also tells them that you're willing to leave if the right offer comes along. So in the back of their mind, they make you that better offer, but they're also looking for how to replace you because they know you're not loyal. And that's the problem with showing your hand. You should, when it's time to leave, you should just leave.
Well, that's exactly.
And don't, because as soon as you tell them, I'm the guy who's willing to leave, oh, and you just talk me into staying, you have a terrible position.
But you know, it depends on how you play the game, because you've got to look at a company like a girlfriend. Mm. And the thing is, you really do, because the moment you say to a girl, excuse me, there's another girl.
Just slap you in the face.
Yeah, you know, it gets a little tense. And I think that a lot of people, when they present to the big companies, it's a combination of what are you going to do for me? The thing is, look, I've been at the bottom of a company and I've been at the head of the top of the company. And it is a relationship because they're human beings running this company, and it becomes very personal because if you come off as it's all about me, nothing about you,
right,
and what can you do, you know, do I wake up every morning, figure out how I can help you, make you richer, and how I can help you in your career times 1,000 people,
right,
that's not what it's about. I think that if people say, hey, look, let me help build the company. Let me help grow the company. Let me help make the company profitable. Those people become valuable. When people sit there and say, I'm going to sit at my desk and come in, and what are you going to do for me to advance my career, then nobody's interested. Then you're that kind of person. But if somebody says, I believe in this company, and I'm going to take this company where it's never been before and help grow it, then you become a power player. And having been at companies and worked for companies – and part of the, because I'm not a freelancer.
Right.
You know, I live in an industry where there are employees and there are people. That is the mentality. And that's when you go from being the driver to the guy who's running the company.
Right.
Because if you believe it's part of your if you believe it's your company and you want to grow it, then you will become a player, because if you're adding that kind of value to a company, you become very valuable because you become a revenue maker.
Yeah,
but it can't be both is the main thing. You have to just know what your priorities are and understand the big picture a little bit better. What your friend did was
stupid.
Not smart.
No, and Scott, it all has to do also with like the culture of the companies, and you guys set up a great culture of being able to promote within and to move your way up, and you make it really attractive. This person was at a company where they didn't have that culture, and he had the gig in his hand. He was like, a gig was there. It's like, dude, you know, here's your career.
What did they offer him to keep him there? Is it a great deal?
They give him $4 more an hour, and it wasn't that much more. It's not like he went from $6 to $10, because nobody does that. You know,
it depends on what level you're at and where you're going. You know, is it the question? I think really is, what's the potential for growth? And if you're at a company where, you know what, because I got a bunch of assholes on top of me that will never let me see the light of day, then it's time to leave.
Well, I think ultimately, I think his problem was he was a little nervous of change. Okay. And he was a little nervous about, you know, stepping up to the plate. He was in a comfort zone. And it just, you know, you're not going to get anywhere staying in a comfort zone. Every one of us around this table have made it to the next level because we've left our comfort zone and we've either struck out with our own studio or we've taken jobs or we've gone. You gotta get out of that comfort zone. So if anybody else is out there right now, if they've been offered a job and you're about to go resign from your other job, resign.
There's no such thing as unquitting and figuring that your old boss is not going to feel a little sting from
that's a good analogy to girlfriends. I mean, you definitely go say, hey, honey, you know, kind of like her. She's kind of nice. What do you think? You know, she does this. Do you think you're going to do this? That's not going to work.
But you know what? Companies get pissed off as if you were leaving a girl.
Absolutely.
And it becomes a divorce, and it becomes a little nasty.
And if anything does come down the road for the company that's not good, the first one to go, like your buddy, obviously got canned because obviously things turned around and they said, well, let's get rid of him.
Yeah. It also depends on how they do it, whether it's done nasty, if you play with them a little bit, like, I don't know, how much are you going to give me? How much are they going to give? If you start playing people, it puts a bad mouth in people's feelings.
Yeah.
You know.
Bad mouth in people's feelings.
That's a new cliche.
Feelings in people's mouth.
Hello.
Bad taste in their mouth.
Bad taste in their mouth.
I like bad mouth in people's feelings.
See, so the point everything's backwards, you know.
I will say though, you know, you're right. You can't play games. I mean, one of the biggest bumps I ever got in pay was I got an offer from another company, and I was at the company that I was at, and I said, hey, listen, I'm going to be taking this other offer. And I was honest. I said, it's because they're offering more money and this is what I need to make. And the company I was at, they matched it and it was all good and dandy.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think, and here's a different side of the question. Do you leave a company to make more money? Do you leave a company to get better opportunities?
I think they're both, would be a reason
they're both valuable.
Because the reason is when I started in the business and I was doing like cartoons and low end editing, I had many opportunities to make more money. I remember this thing called Third Street Sound. And someone said, you got to go there. They got a single. It's the biggest single. You could make good money. They'll pay you well. I said, what projects? The projects are shit. But you'll make good money. Right. I went to a company where I made less money.
Well.
But the projects were better, which was Sound Deluxe, became a partner and grew into that. And now I'm making more money than all of those people ever did.
No, I would agree. You don't let money rule your decisions, but I will tell you, in my situation, I came into a company and I was really underpaid for what I was doing, especially for what the industry norm was. I brought clients in. Clients came in. Clients stayed there because of me. Clients wanted to work there because of me. So I was definitely bringing in the revenue. So I felt like I was in a position where it's like, you know, when you start generating a revenue and when you can, you yourself can be responsible for dollars and cents, you've got a really good, you know, bargaining chip. You've got a really good chip, and you got to take advantage of that while you can. Especially,
and my philosophy is figure out the highest pay for what you do, and then take one step back.
Oh, that's exactly what I did.
Never take the full step.
No, I didn't shoot for the moon. I was actually I went from the low to the mid. And it was a really easy move, and they were, the facility was making money, and it worked out, you know, really good. And, so you gotta kind of play both
sides.
There
are some very not nice people out there.
Yeah, but you also have to, you know. Two things, you got to look out for yourself because nobody's looking out for you.
Sure.
You know, and.
But I have to find out, so did you end up, the thing you were talking about earlier where they matched the offer, did you end up still leaving?
No, I stayed.
Oh, you stayed?
I stayed because I was, but the thing was, is I didn't blindside them because I told them point blank what was happening, and I had a relationship with the owner of the company where I could talk to them, and I said, hey, listen, this is what's happening. And actually it was a pretty good, a post place. So the opportunities were good. I actually liked staying where I was, and they were happy with me, and they saw the revenue growth.
So it worked out well.
It worked out really well. So you kind of have to read the situation, mm-hmm. you know?
I've been at Soundlux now. As of August, or as of this coming August, 21 years.
Wow.
Yeah. You don't even look 21.
All right. Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break. We're way over right now, but hey, it's good to be back, guys, though.
It is good to be back.
And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Scott about his work on Hellboy, and we're also going to talk to Josh over there on something that he can comment on, and that's his podcast, The Galley Slave. So we'll take a break. We'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And, before the break, we had a really good discussion on how not to ruin your career.
Yeah.
But we're here with Josh Anthony. And Josh actually has a podcast, and also with Sophie Forbes. Tell us a little bit about your podcast, The Galley Slaves.
Our show is basically a group of guys and a girl. We get together and basically sitting around having a couple of drinks, talking about relationships, sports, entertainment, pretty much what's going on in the world, so, and stories, a lot of.
So it's like the Audio Nowcast, but with everything that's relevant in today's world. Yeah.
It's like a men's magazine, but in radio show format. So anything that you would find in like Maxim magazine, GQ, Esquire, we pretty much cover that. So movies,
they have a life.
Yeah, we discussed movies like last week. We actually have a geek on our show. His name's Chad Riley, and he talked about The Dark Knight and how geeked out he was about it. Talks about Comic-Con, stuff like that, and just share our stories, and it's more fun than I've had in a long time.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And how do you find it?
I'm going to move over to their side a little bit.
Yeah, next podcast. Where did everybody go?
We should be up on iTunes in the next couple of weeks, but you can get it at www.thegalleyslaves.com, and shows are up there, along with some pictures and some profiles of us and Sophie. And it's great. It's a lot of fun.
See, Josh, you're sitting at the right microphone because you sound really good. You've got Andrew's golden mic because it sounds great. So
I guess a good mic.
We're all fighting for that mic next.
And how long have you been podcasting?
We just started. We are about
a couple of months,
about the second month in. And hopefully we'll start going live as well, too. Try to get a live stream going so people can call in. And if you guys want to come on and bullshit with us, excuse me. Yeah. That'd be great.
Oh, we don't do that.
Have a few drinks. Oh,
say no more. I'm there now.
Okay, well, if you can find the next podcast over at the Galley Slaves. and Sophie, how is it being with all the guys then?
It's trouble. No, it's great fun. I think if I didn't know them as well as I did, then it would be quite intimidating, but you have to learn how to deal with them. So they get... He sounds all nice now, but when he's in the studio and he's got a few vodka Red Bulls inside him and we're talking about men versus women type topics, I get ganged up on.
Yeah, but she gives as good as she gets.
Yeah,
so.
You know, I can, I give it back. So.
You know, she is worth gold in your podcast because her voice with that accent,
brilliant.
I mean,
That's sexy, yeah.
Yeah, I
she's
know.
She's got more fans than anyone else on the show.
So just remember, you hold the power on that podcast.
We actually talked about this today, didn't we?
Yeah,
Because our website has been generating some activity all about me. And I'm not actually the host of the show.
Yeah. I actually work at a studio a lot, and some of my friends listen to the podcast. They're like, so when is Sophie coming in to see you at work? I'm like, oh, she'll be here in an hour. Like, all right, well, just let me know when she's going to come in, because I'll be there.
And Josh, what do you, what's your day job? What's your day gig? Or?
What is my day job? I work part-time at Sony.
Oh, okay.
Doing post-production finance. I work about 20 hours a week over there, and I'm also an actor as well when they hire me, and which isn't a lot lately. But
what was the last thing you're in? What was
last thing I was in, whether it was relevant, would be General Hospital.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And how do you feel about the sound guys on General Hospital?
The sound guys are phenomenal.
They're like, who?
Reverb, added, I don't know. Was the I couldn't keep up before. But.
And Sophie, what about you? Besides being the next internet star.
We'll see. I'm actually an entertainment journalist. So I cover events and you know, things like the Oscars and the MTV Awards for the British newspapers and some of the US kind of weekly glossy magazines.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I do everything from celebrity stuff to fashion and beauty and... yeah, that kind of thing.
Oh, so. That's great. Okay, well, it's the Audio Now cast.
I can slip it in somewhere. Yeah, buy this mascara and listen to this podcast.
There you go. I can just, Josh, I can see
actually,
your next.
Actually, you wear mascara, don't you?
And the fishnets.
Fishnets, yeah. Mascara, yeah. And the wig. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing wrong with a thong.
I could just see your next podcast. So I went to this really geeky podcast.
You guys
and
are more
we managed
than
to turn it into the galley stuff.
You guys are more than welcome to come on.
Talking about cool.
We actually, we're going to have a football segment coming up this week.
Oh,
the nice. American way versus the British way.
So. The start of the season in 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. It's going to be huge.
And we all know it's the American way, but we'll talk about that later.
Let's not start that fight right now.
Oh, come on.
You should leap across the table and grab you.
The Super Bowl
last year. You know what's amazing, though? When I was in London, I was walking in the streets, and they have a tradition there, which I think is quite charming, and that is 5, 6 o'clock, everybody's on the street. And it looks kind of like – and it's not like there'll be a pub. There's not one pub. There's like 20 pubs down on one street, and there's about 300 to 400 people out on the street per pub.
They're
watching,
football.
They're watching the Euro Cup.
Yeah, UEFA Cup.
Okay, so all of a sudden, because they also had rallies, political rallies going on, so I wasn't sure what I was hearing. All of a sudden, yelling and screaming, it sounded like a riot. So I'm going, oh. I'm going to go back in the studio. So the next day I come back out. So I'm going, what is it? And I'm watching it, and it looks like somewhere between lemurs and meerkats. Everybody is standing by the windows watching TV, not moving. The moment somebody scores, echoing down the street, screaming at the top of their lungs, stopping. And starting again.
Madness.
So, oh yeah, it was amazing.
And that happens once every 3 hours? How often is it?
Yeah, but it is. I mean, socially, I thought it was quite amazing because there's for entertainment, imagine this. There's two streets, Wardour and Dean Street. And I was staying off of Dean Street. And pretty much everybody in post-production are in those two streets. That's it. For all of London, they all live in two streets, other than Pinewood and Shepperton. But what's great is at lunchtime, they're all, hi, how you doing? The whole industry is living in two very long blocks for the most part. And I thought that was quite charming. Then everybody, 5, 6 o'clock, everyone gets off work, boom, hits the pub for a couple hours, goes home.
And I was thinking about that in L.A., and it doesn't exist anywhere.
No. Not even happy hour out here.
No, there's no, there's no meeting place.
Such a shame.
It is.
Such a shame.
I love happy hour.
London is such a nice...
I mean, Delane Lee, one of the post-production studios, has their own bar.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, for, that's moving. I would never leave there.
Okay.
I
mean, okay.
You couldn't find a better job.
No, but I will say, you know, as much as I've been kidding on the American football versus... the Euro football.
No, the football, I, as opposed to handball. Carry on.
I was in Israel for the World Cup 1 year, and it was the best time I've ever had was watching soccer over there. It was just great. It was awesome. So you're,
and
everybody's
excited and yells.
Well, hey, listen, before we run out of time and talking about football, you know, thank you guys for joining us.
Thanks for having us in.
And
thank you.
We're looking forward to listening to the Galley Slaves at the Galley Slaves.
TheGalleySlaves.com. Check it out. Sure.
All right.
Thank you.
Speaking of London, Scott, as you said, you were over there working on Hellboy 2.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, mainly because I was in the movie theater and I was the only guy who was taking notes during the movie. Because there were so many great things about that film, especially about the sound that I wanted to ask you about. One of the things I wanted to ask you right off the bat was, you know, you had such a limited, time schedule to do the sounds. How did you even prep yourself for that? I mean, when you got there, you basically got there and did you have something to work with, or did you say, okay, we got to start over and just go from there?
There was a team that was on previously before I was there, and the decision was made to come up with another audio solution to that team. And my job was to go there, evaluate the situation, figure out what was needed, and to get this movie made so it can come out, you know, before July 4th. And, you know, I went in there, and I've never been as stressed and scared out in my life. I don't know. You know, I saw some of the film. I wasn't sure. And to be honest, a lot of it is instinctual. I've done these films before. I know how to do it. If I actually think about what I'm doing, I probably would have freaked out. Automatically went in there 15 minutes after I was in the hotel, went to the studio, started working. We were doing, you know, easy 9 to 2, you know. What we would do with restaurants, we would call ahead, order the food. They'd put it on the table. We'd run over, eat it, run back to the studio.
Wow.
And luckily we were, again, on Dean Street, so there were tons of restaurants. And what was great, again, it was like climbing Mount Everest in audio. Normally to do a project like this, we would have 30 weeks. For this, we had about 8.5.
Wow.
And I brought people on in L.A. I had crews running 24 hours a day.
You had people working in L.A.?
I had people in L.A. I had people. What was great was an international crew. I had Londoners.
Right.
I had people from Mexico, Argentina, Colombia, and Spain.
Wow.
I had people in L.A. working. And I positioned it where I literally had people, because of the time zone, 24 hours.
So did you have like a team, like, for instance, you know, you look at Johann Kraus, you know, his sound design.
Yes.
Did you have a team that was just his character?
Yes.
Because he had a lot of, not only did he have, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, he has.
Is that the guy? Is that the red guy?
That's the metal guy with the little, had the German accent and is walking around with. Like red guy's Hellboy.
His name is Hellboy.
But the thing about Kraus was he had, his voice had an effect on it. And then all the little, like, gizmos, all the little gears and stuff of that little.
Foley.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, lot of sound effects.
Well, it was great because it kept changing it. We had one person named Vanessa. Who was, I think, from Argentina, and then she was then in Italy and then in London. She was great. She had the wonderful job of literally syncing and resyncing and resyncing as it kept making changes in CG.
Wow.
To both Abe's eyes, gills, and all of Kraus.
Wow.
So we had about 80 tracks of audio just for those two characters.
And we're talking little sounds, like, you know,
well,
just
little. Well, we had the mouth metal. We had the kind of the gills on the sides. We had the inner workings of the... of the dome head. We had all the clicking of the fingers.
Yeah.
It was about 80 different sounds at any one point. Probably Kraus, probably out of the 80, probably at 70.
Let me ask you about another highlight of the sound design was when they did the splitting of the water, where they do that the sword fight, that sword, and he's it was just so, it was so delicate, and it was just such a cool effect. I mean, that was just, I don't know if you remember that particular sound effect, but that was
intimately.
That was fantastic. The other thing,
it's funny, I just got finished doing the DVD.
Oh,
like
so
yesterday. So we did 7.1, actually.
Wow, yeah. That's cool. The other thing I wanted to tell you was I could tell, I don't know if this was your influence, but I know you tend to have this philosophy of not only it's the sound that you hear, mm-hmm. but sometimes it's the sound that you don't hear.
Yeah.
And there were some pretty key moments where it just dropped out to nothing. I mean, it dropped to just dead silence, which made the next sound effect that much more impactful. And I noticed that, and it was really, really effective, you know.
Thank you.
Especially the water slice at the beginning and things of that nature. One question I wanted to ask was the flame effects for Liz, you know. I mean, my gosh, that must have been just a pain in the butt, because you had to have all those different laps of the flames, and you had to have all that. I mean, how was that? Was that foleyed? Was that?
No. The flames we did in sound design. It's funny because I feel like we've left a couple things on the table with Liz, because I was doing this whole vocoder treatment with fire to get her voice to actually become like talking flames, and I kind of ran out of time. And I couldn't quite perfect it the way I wanted it. But, yeah, we wanted to get all the motion. I mean, the whole point of Hellboy, and I've worked with Guillermo before in Blade, and we might be working soon and on another upcoming project we might be working on, which might take me away from the podcast for a little bit. But
well, then say no. No, I'm just kidding.
I might go down under. The whole point of Hellboy is it's a comic book. And what we wanted to do, and I think Guillermo's really keen on this, and I think we've got a great relationship, there's beats and moments within any film that you've got to hit. And it's not about the sound effect. It's about hitting those beats, getting the comedy, getting the action, getting it just where it feels right. And with all of the characters, whether it's the Bogarts or the Tooth Fairies or Wink or any of these different kinds of characters, it's got to be enlightening enough. It's got to be different. There's times where Danny Elfman did the music, did a wonderful job, and where the music wants to speak, and then the sound design wants to speak. Then we want to maybe not have anybody speak because the audience needs a break from all the constant fighting,
right.
or harassment we were harassing them with. But it's just trying to look at each scene and figure out how to bring it to life. And Guillermo's visuals are pretty amazing. And the great thing is a lot of those characters aren't CG.
Right. Right, no,
which is kind
great.
Of nice, different that it's not just a CG movie, but the costumes and were just, you know, crazy.
There was definitely Mr. You know, speaking of Wink,
Mr. Wink,
his roar. I mean, what was that? Was there any llamas in there?
No, there weren't any llamas. No, I mean, you know, it's Wink was a combination of different animals and Guillermo. Guillermo,
really?
Oh, Guillermo vocalized an amazing amount of that show.
Really?
Yeah, and then and of course, officially, I didn't do any vocals. but unofficially, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, no, we did a lot of vocalizations. Everything down from the Tooth Fairies to Wink.
Wow.
To the Golden Army, and there's tons of vocals, and a lot of vocal manipulation. I spent about 5 days in a booth. Totally losing my voice.
Wow.
So, and then Guillermo did something. Guillermo, again, he's a very inspiring guy, and he's got an amazing sense of creativity that just wants, he's the Pied Piper of creativity. You start getting stupid around him, and you just follow him anywhere. And he just takes you to places, and he challenges you. And then the visuals that he had are kind of inspiring. What I liked about it, it was something very familiar but yet different.
Right.
You know, it was Men in Black meet Pan's Labyrinth meets Blade.
Yeah,
meets,
no.
You know, all these different influences. And it's kind of fun, you know.
Great look. Has a great look.
Yeah, great look.
And you're right. Not having all that CG was definitely a plus. Well, one of the last things I wanted to ask you about was the rock monster.
At the end? The rock troll?
Yeah, that was awesome. The sound and the way it just kind of, the foley and that. And is that like, how do you even approach doing something like that? Because you've got, it's not so much of the literal sounds that you see with the hits and things like that. It's mm-hmm. all the, like, the dirt falling and the granite grinding and all that, mm-hmm. that kind of sound effects. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't think people really realize, you know, when you hear a sound like that, it, it fits the character so well, but there is no rock monster.
it's all about, a lot of it was also the time we had a great, source of library to deal with. And when we didn't have libraries, we either created it on a Foley stage or did it with our mouths.
Was that Foley? That's what basically I wanted.
It's everything. I mean, nothing is, there was one great thing. There's a gentleman named Nikolai in France who did some design Foley, which kind of blew my mind. Some of that's, the Rock Troll, some of it's Tooth Fairies. He just took a troll market. He took a very different approach. He was doing like vocalizations through a trumpet mouthpiece.
Wow!
So some stuff that was kind of out of the box, and we had a really good crew. We worked really fast, really hard, and when I first went there, I told Guillermo, I said, "I'll get you sound, but I can't guarantee it's going to be, you know, that good," based on the time we had. And at the end of the day, we went from okay to good to. You know what? I don't have to apologize for it, and I think it actually holds up against any of the sound jobs this summer. So once we passed that, I mean, you know, the last mix day was 28 hours long.
Wow.
And
Where did you mix at?
Everywhere. Most of the mix was at Delane Lee. We did Goldcrest. We did Pinewood. We did pretty much every mix stage we used. I had three mix stages going at one point. And then we ended up having Michael Keller be in our effects pre-dub mixer and then print masterer. And then we had Mike Presswood-Smith and Mark Taylor, who are just – you know, everyone had a great attitude. And even the crew that we were there to replace, we brought on, and they became all one crew. And everyone became actually a really tight family.
Wow. Now, when you're running three stages at one time, is each stage, do they have a different reel, or are y'all pre-dubbing your effects down?
We pre-dubbed the dialogue at Peter Gabriel's studio over at
Wow.
Yeah. And that was quite a treat. And then afterwards I went over to Both. And hung out there and because that's where Mike Presswood-Smith has a room there. And again, you know, many, many rooms, and it was pretty crazy. I lost about 15 pounds when I was there.
Wow.
Running back and forth down the block, listening, you know, because when we first got there, we thought, okay, we're going to just come in and do the final. Somebody else is going to do the temp. That train's already left the station. So, when I got there, I said, okay, you know, Guillermo, we're here to do the final. And Guillermo goes, my friend? You are not going to get a lot of sleep while you're here. And if you think you're not going to work on the temp, I can't say the rest of it, but it was a bunch of colorful words. So, yeah, we got there. We started working on the temp. We worked as hard as you could work. I had three guys in the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, from exhaustion.
Well, you say that with, like, a smile on your face.
Well, because I was actually one of them. It's how far can you go and but you know what? It's a good project. At least we're working that hard on a project you like.
Right.
Rather than a project you don't like. And
well,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say it shows because it sounds good. It was really a really good sounding
Thank
show.
You.
And
Thank
I
you.
And I wasn't I'm not just saying that because I knew you and when your name came up I was going, "Hey, look, it's
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I think for me I didn't see it coming, which was kind of a nice treat.
Right.
That all of a sudden you get the call and you're like,
"Yeah."
And also it's the first time I've ever worked out of the country. You know, and they speak with that foreign language there, you know.
Yeah.
But, it was great. And we actually have an office in London, which I've never been to. but now I have. And I've actually become quite good friends with everybody there. So it was great. The world kind of stopped for 9 weeks.
Right.
And that's all we pretty much focused on. Oh, actually, I take that back. We almost focused on. While I was also there, I also ended up finishing Fable 2.
Wow.
And then it's been pretty crazy. And then
that's a video game.
Yeah,
I know about that.
And then the moment I'm finishing Gears of War.
Wow.
And then the last cool thing is I'm doing a project that I would create a photon torpedo for. So I've been pretty much doing phasers and photon torpedoes.
Scott, you working on anything interesting?
No, not at all.
Well, but I'm looking for a vacation really soon.
Well, Scott, you did a great job, and I just want to encourage everybody out there, go see Hellboy, especially if you like the first one. The second one will not disappoint you.
Yeah.
It was really great. Well, hey, listen, gang, we're gonna wrap up, but I just want to thank everybody for being here. Rob, you're working on anything fun and exciting that you can talk about yet?
Not that I can talk about, but right now the stuff we're working on, we're trying to get done so I can get out of town for a few days. Which would be wonderful.
Bobby, how about you? I know you were working crazy.
Yeah, I was crazy.
I tried to call you and try to
you
get
know,
in
I was,
there.
I went off to the Emmy thing. I went off to New York in vain.
Oh, yeah, how was that?
Yeah. It was great. New York was hot. That was it.
Where did you put your Emmy?
Yeah, exactly.
He stores it at the winner's house. Is that
yeah, exactly. But it's actually good. The show won 3 and every category except music.
Wait, who did win?
Actually, tell the truth, I can't remember. You know, when you hear it's not you, Garth.
That's right. You don't hear it.
Where's the pub? I'm working a bunch of stuff. I'm doing One Life to Live. Doing another run of that. And I'm doing 7 songs. Songs for somebody, and then I'm doing interesting project for an Australian company, record company, which is kind of like it's a song and a competition kind of thing on the internet. It's like 4 different styles of music, and it's kind of fun. I can't really talk about that because it's NDA right now, but same sort of thing. So that's what I'm doing.
Great. Yeah. And Josh and Sophie, you guys are going to be recording your next podcast soon?
Yeah.
And
hopefully this week, yeah. Hopefully
great.
This week,
yeah. Hopefully here.
Yeah.
If allowed, yeah.
Fine, do it here.
If we're allowed back.
And take over your studio.
That'd be great. I'm going to be working on 13 commercials that are due tomorrow. So,
tonight, right?
Are you serious?
Here. Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. Yeesh. It's crazy. But you know what? You got to do what you got to do.
You should have brought it here. You could absolutely. Put it on a Mac. We could have done it. Each one of us could have done it. Well, take a break. Other one's speaking. We go, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, the crazy thing is, you know, there was 2 days this week where I basically sat in the studio and watched movies because didn't have a thing to do. So you think they would be able to space this out. But no, this is a really big studio that just does not work that way.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, once again, guys, thanks for listening to us. And remember, you can always reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And you can visit our MySpace page at myspace.com/audionowcast. And I just once again want to thank everybody for writing in. We're back on. We're going to be doing our next one in 2 weeks. And Martin will be back. And we're going to be talking about songwriting and collaborating with people. And we're going to talk about successes as well as the many, 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 many failures. All right. So for myself and all the guys, thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and West Wave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.